This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit chevrolet.gm.ca.
Welcome back to Sounds Like Canada. I'm Drew Hayden Taylor. In this half hour, the debate of Star Wars versus Star Trek. I'm sure you have a position. The year 2007 is significant to fans of Star Wars and Star Trek. For Star Wars fans, it marks the 30th anniversary of the release of George Lucas' original masterpiece. And for Star Trek fans, who marked the 40th anniversary of the original TV series last year, this is a year of anticipation. They are waiting for a brand new take on the original Star Trek. There's a movie in the works that revisits the classic characters from the 1960s show. Young actors will step into the roles of Captain James T. Kirk, Spock, Mr. Sulu, and the gang on the Starship Enterprise. And for me, all of this presents a good excuse to do something I've always dreamed of. Ladies and gentlemen, the sci-fi grudge match to end all sci-fi grudge matches. We have invited two guests to our studio to debate which is better, the original Star Trek TV series or the original Star Wars movie trilogy. Robert Sawyer is a huge Star Trek fan and a science fiction writer. He's in Toronto. Devin Cameron is a huge Star Wars fan and a systems analyst at an IT company in Halifax. Live long and prosper, you guys.
Beam me up.
All right, Robert, let's start with you.
Sure.
What is so good about Star Trek?
I tell you, the reason I'm a science fiction writer today is because of Star Trek. I was growing up in the 1960s when the stuff on the evening news was the Vietnam War, for instance, the struggle to desegregate the American South. And when you watched what passed for entertainment in the 1960s, there were no references at all to the real world, except, ironically, in this show called Star Trek, which was absolutely talking about and being critical of the Vietnam War, absolutely portraying an inclusive future where people of all colors and men and women were both holding significant roles. It was a wonderfully positive portrayal, a future worth striving to make into a reality.
All right. Now let's swing over to the other side. What's, Robert, what's not good about Star Wars?
Well, all the exact opposite. You look at Star Wars, the original movie, and it's a singularly white, now they say a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but its portrayal of the future of a technologically advanced society was entirely dominated by white people. The only woman who had any power had the power by virtue of birth rank. She was a princess, not that she'd earned anything. Luke Skywalker, who is supposedly the virtuous hero, is a slaveholder in that film. There's no question that R2-D2 and C-3PO are thinking, feeling, caring beings, and yet they're vended by the Jawas to Luke, who promptly has restraining bolts welded onto them. When they go into the Mos Eisley Cantina and the bartender says what African-Americans had heard bartenders say all the time in recent memory in 1977, "We don't serve their kind in here," Luke doesn't say, "That's outrageous, that's racist, that's unacceptable." He turns to the two people being discriminated against just because their skin is metal and says, "You better wait outside." He's a collaborator with a racist infrastructure.
All right, Devin, he's got in the first punch. It's time for you to counterpunch. How do you defend Star Wars from what he's just said?
Well, if I could first comment on Star Trek,
it's all right, interesting. Yeah, start with Star Trek.
Yeah, it's interesting that he says it's, you know, it's realistic and whatnot, and really it's not. It's an idealistic, it's an altruistic show that takes a military vessel that's out there doing things with an entirely military crew, and they sort of try and enforce a moral lesson in every episode, and they try and impart some kind of a moral message or an ideal and cram it down the audience's throat.
Introducing a moral message, is that so bad? Is that so evil?
It's not that it's evil. It's that, you know, how many times can you do a plot where it's good versus evil? You know, these aliens are going to test us. And then, a few episodes later, these aliens are going to test us. There's a lot of repetition, and there's only so many attempts you can have to try and, see, get it? We're talking about the Soviet Union. See, get it? We're talking
and
about
racism.
And
by the third film of your Star Wars trilogy, by Return of the Jedi, they're blowing up, oh, my God, another Death Star, because they'd already run out of plots after two films. It's a remake of the first film with better special effects.
All right, Devin, you've told me about what Star Trek isn't. What is Star Wars?
Well, Star Wars is certainly a lot more gritty, a lot more realistic. It has characters that you can actually relate to, as opposed to the wooden figures from the old Star Trek episode. You have characters that experience growth in a span of a trilogy that takes 8 hours, more growth than is present in 60 episodes of Star Trek, or however many it was.
79, I believe.
Doesn't have – well, there you go. But I might have been discounting all the recycled plots of time travel or alien possession or whatever. And you have a grittiness and a vibrancy to the universe that is completely opposite from the sterile environment of Star Trek. If you look at most people are familiar with drinking establishments. If you look at the drinking establishment in The Trouble with Tribbles, it's a sterile environment where you're going and you're drinking your Romulan ale. You look at the cantina in Star Wars, it's populated with many diverse creatures, not all of them white males, not all of them
every
humanoid.
Every Homo sapiens in the scene is a white male, my friend.
No, I don't think that's the case. Look at Hammerhead, or you look at other
every
characters.
Homo sapiens, every human in the scene is a white male.
Yeah.
To say, we don't need to have black people, and we don't need to have women, and we certainly don't need any Asians, because we got a hammer-headed alien, is hardly getting out of the problem of Star Wars portraying a white future. Hey, we got a guy in a mask. He might be a black actor under there.
Right, and so employing minorities in the Star Trek cast, for example, in the second season, hey, we should have a Russian. Let's bring a Russian guy in. That's certainly a completely different situation entirely.
All right. We want to play a clip here and get your reaction to what is in this clip, so pay attention.
Thank the maker. This oil bath is going to feel so good.
It just isn't fair. Oh, Biggs is right. I'm never going to get out of here.
Is there anything I might do to help?
Oh, not unless you can alter time, speed up the harvest, or teleport me off this rock.
I see, sir.
Oh, you can call me Luke.
I see, Sir Luke. And I am C-3PO, Human-Cyborg Relations. And this is my counterpart, R2-D2.
You're a lot of carbon scoring here. Looks like you boys have seen a lot of action.
With all we've been through, sometimes I'm amazed we're in as good condition as we are. What with the rebellion and all.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
That's how we came to be in your service, if you take my meaning, sir.
Have you been in many battles?
Several, I think. Actually, there's not much to tell.
Well, my little friend, get something jammed in here real good. Were you on a Star Cruiser?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
What's this?
What is what? He asked you a question. What is that?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Who is she? She's beautiful.
She's his sister.
Okay, now that was Luke Skywalker and C-3PO from the original Star Wars released 40 years ago. Now I'm going to take a wild shot in the dark here and say that Robert has something to say about that clip.
Actually, no, I wasn't. It's a trivial clip. It could have come from any film except for the tricks of dialogue, saying, you know, laser scoring and cyborg relations. It has nothing to do with being a science fictional thing. It is, as everybody well knows, Lucas borrowed very heavily from Kurosawa in creating R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Devin, what does this clip say to you?
Well, it's interesting that he mentions borrowing from Kurosawa. Well, a lot of creators take or are inspired by other sources. You know, I look at the iPhone. Did Steve Jobs steal from the guy who invented the cell phone or the guy who invented the MP3 player? No, they're inspired. They combine it to filter it, produce a new product that has a completely different take than the stuff that came before.
What is the completely different take from Star Wars and the Kurosawa film that he borrowed from? What makes it different other than the changing of the nouns from old nouns to new nouns?
They're certainly not the same film. You can't sit down and play them frame by frame and say, hey, this is the exact same thing. There's elements that are certainly inspired by the earlier films. But I'm sure if I look at Trek, I can start pointing out issues with that as well. Hey, let's do an episode with Nazis. That's terribly original. Let's do an episode with 30s gangsters. That's also terribly original.
Well, didn't
but
Joseph,
back to the clip.
Didn't Joseph Campbell basically say Star Wars was just the Arthurian myth in the future? You know, you've got the young knight on a quest. You've got the wizard. You've got the mercenary. It's just King Arthur in a different environment.
Absolutely, and it's certainly full of exaggerated, you know, archetypes. You have the hero, the villain, the princess, the knights. I mean, in the Death Star rescue, they even don armor. It's stormtrooper armor, but it's still armor to go and rescue that princess. is about a journey, a character development story that crosses all three films. And if you follow the central figure, he does go through changes all the way through. If I look at the characters on Star Trek, you know, they're the same. I could watch those episodes in any particular order, and aside from which crew member is present and which
totally,
isn't.
But that's an argument about
no
a motion
growth.
Picture versus a TV series. It has nothing to do with Star Trek versus Star Wars. It's the reality of what television was in the 1960s. It's a minor issue. If you want to look at the whole Star Trek canon, Kirk and Spock do go through an awful lot of changes by the end of the Star Trek movies.
But if you look at the series, they do not.
And
if you look
at the series, that is a knock against series
the only people,
television.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's a knock against the storytelling. I think you can, if I look at series television, I can see growth.
Perry Mason grew in what way?
I have a quick question. First of all, one of the chief complaints about the Star Trek original classic series is that the acting and the writing and the production of the show is kind of campy or cheesy. How do you address that?
The production of the show was within the production budgets of television in the 1960s. I think the writing was spectacular. I'll point out that in my own field of science fiction, the top honor is the Hugo Award, and Star Trek won it repeatedly, and Star Wars never did. By the aficionados of the industry, I think you'll see that this is a better piece of work. I don't think Star Wars won a Hugo. Maybe it did in 77, but I can't remember. But you had great writers. You had Theodore Sturgeon. You had Robert Block, who wrote Psycho.
William Clayton
Harlan
Johnson.
Harlan Ellison writing for this. And I don't think you can argue that. In fact, as Harrison Ford himself said to George Lucas, throwing his hands up on the set, he said, "George, you can write this dialogue, but we can't read it."
And it's an unfortunate that Star Trek was able to employ William Shatner to produce some of that dialogue.
Why is it
that dialogue they were able to produce?
CBC employed William Shatner an awful lot as well, and he is a two-time Emmy Award winning
actor.
And
he did come from Stratford, if I remember correctly.
But first. If you resurrect a career, I don't know that that saves the early
efforts.
He was
a Stratford Festival actor beforehand, but I know their requirements are pretty lax up there. Anybody
children, thing? Please. We played a clip from Star Wars. We're going to now do a clip from Star Trek from the third season.
Galaxies surround us. Limitless vistas. And yet the Federation would have us grub away like some ants on some somewhat larger than usual anthill. But I am not an insect. I am master of the universe. And I must claim my domain.
I agree, there was a time when war was necessary, and you were our greatest warrior. I studied your victory at Axanar when I was a cadet. In fact, it still required reading at the academy.
As well it should be.
Very well. But my first visit to Axanar was as a new-fledged cadet on a peace mission.
Peace mission? Politicians and weaklings!
They were humanitarians and statesmen. And they had a dream. A dream that became a reality and spread throughout the stars. A dream that made Mr. Spock and me brothers.
Mr. Spock! Do you consider Captain Kirk and yourself brothers?
Captain Kirk speaks somewhat figuratively and with undue emotion. However, what he says is logical, and I do, in fact, agree with it.
Now, Devin, do you detect a whiff of cheese coming from that clip?
Absolutely, and that's from the later episodes where they knew they were in danger of being canceled, so they tried to be even more relevant and oh, we're all brothers and look how great we can be and look at us push this message back out to the audience. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's poor.
Robert?
Oh, I think I totally disagree. What he said about Cantina sequence before said, yeah, you could use science fiction to show that the world will never be a better place, that the future, or long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, will be just like today. Or you can actually use it as a vehicle to send messages and say things that can't be said in any other way. And Star Trek tried to do that. I think that's a disingenuous comment to say, oh, by the third season, they decided to be relevant. They were relevant and gutsy from season one.
They were attempting to be
relevant. They were relevant and gutsy from season one. And Star Wars forever never managed to do anything except make acne-scarred teenage boys who were sitting there with no date watching the movie say, ooh, wow, look at that woman in the brass bikini.
Unlike the guys with the Spock ears looking at the green women, I'm sure.
All right, Robert, I'm going to ask you a Star Trek question. I think the second most common question hanging around the Star Trek community. Favorite starship captain?
Oh, for me, it is Kirk. Kirk was flawed, despite what our friend here said. I do think he went through a lot of character growth during the three seasons of the show. He was a guy who I learned a lot of good things about being a man from Kirk. To apologize when you were wrong, to be loyal to your friends, to put other things that are bigger than yourself ahead of your own personal desires. Luke Skywalker taught me if you're bored keeping slaves on your farm and shooting animals for joy, which is what he did, you really should get out there because adventure and excitement will make a man out of you and maybe let you sleep with your sister. Captain Kirk all the way for me.
I don't know that Kirk is really a moral center. You know, we know he loves risks. We know he loves the ladies. I mean, look at his one-night stands. but we have to... You know, we're forced to assume that he and his crew are brilliant and they have some kind of, amazing skills, whereas we actually see those skills develop throughout the trilogy in the Star Wars films with as people learn and grow. We have Kirk who says at one point, "I'm a soldier, not a diplomat," because he's on a military vessel and he's out there, you know, speaking from his big federation, which is the equivalent of the evil empire on the Trek side.
Well, Devin, what does the character of Luke Skywalker say to you?
Well, Luke is interesting because, you know, you have a character that starts and is relatable to most people. Hey, we all want a better life. We all want to move on and make things better and make things more interesting. He goes out. He initially doesn't he's seeking adventure. He goes and he finds it. He becomes part of the team. In the first film at the end, you know, he's not a leader. He's not a commander. He's wearing a uniform like everybody else. He's part of the group. And then in Empire, he starts to sort of develop his role as a leader. He becomes a little more special. And then in Return of the Jedi, he really accepts it. And he becomes appreciative of his abilities and sort of takes on that sort of mentor role and leadership role.
Well, Devin, one quick question here. Let's talk about the larger picture, the cultural impact both have had on society. I mean, I doubt if there's a person in North America that at one point hasn't either said or been said to "Beam me up, Scotty." Do you think Star Wars has had that, has penetrated the pop culture just as strongly?
Star Wars has certainly been sprinkled throughout pop culture, if not more than Star Trek, certainly at its equal. I think it's interesting that so many people, you know, say, you know, "May the Force be with you" and whatnot when people are on so inclined. But I think, on the flip side, you have the nerve punch has made its way, or the nerve pinch has made its way throughout the zeitgeist and whatnot. So I think they both really have made a landmark impact on pop culture in general.
Well, what do you think science fiction filmmakers or writers should they concern themselves with creating appropriate role models, or just comment on a state of the world, or, you know, just screw it all, just entertain?
I think there's opportunities to do all of that, and it's an opportunity for most authors to say, you know, it's not just that, you know, this is how I would like things to be, and this is like how I would prefer things to go. You can still tell a story about growth and about developing a maturity and developing an acceptance of your role in the world or the universe without, you know, deliberately pushing back in people's face the current state of the world that they're in. You know, there's an element of escapism to science fiction and fantasy writing in general that sort of has to have that kind of put you somewhere else. And so keep coming back and hammering back at where you are is not necessarily productive.
Do you agree, Robert?
I disagree. No, of course. Obviously, as a professional science fiction writer, I disagree. When he says there's an element of escapism, that's true. What I would ask is, what beyond escapism did Star Wars provide us? It's fun entertainment. There's nothing wrong with having fun entertainment. But you're really reaching to say, and it's showing us how you can mature and become a leader through Luke Skywalker's incredibly convoluted, complex, nuanced, and believable journey in those three films. From my point of view, science fiction, it isn't about cramming people's views down other people's throats. And I don't think that necessarily is what happened in Star Trek all the time. Although I admit, there's a lot more of it, there will be more incidences where things go wrong, for sure. But I think that science fiction as a tool for social comment is a very important cultural artifact. And there just almost is none at all in Star Wars. There is one little bit in one of the later films, but there's none in the earlier films. And so you're asking, is relevance versus irrelevance, which one do you side with? I side with relevance. Are you asking, does social comment versus no social comment, which one do you side with? I side with social comment. the guy who was the filmmaker
that
is right.
I don't think that's accurate. I don't think that you can say that this is a black and white situation where one has all of X value.
No, obviously
and the
not.
Other
but
one
you're
does
on
not.
One side and I'm on the other, and that's why we're here. You chose the dark side. I chose the light side. That's the way it's going to work out.
Well, gentlemen, this has been so much fun. Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
You're welcome.
Robert Sawyer is a huge Star Trek fan and a science fiction writer. He's joined us from Toronto. Devin Cameron is a huge Star Wars fan and a systems analyst at an IT company in Halifax. We'll give the last word this morning to William Shatner, a.k.a. Captain James Tiberius Kirk. He's come to appreciate his fans in recent years, but there was a time when he frowned upon them and upon debates like this one. This is a bit of a sketch that aired 20 years ago on Saturday Night Live. We join William Shatner at a Star Trek fan convention.
Having received all your letters over the years, and I've spoken to many of you, and some of you have traveled, hundreds of miles to be here, I'd just like to say, get a life, will you, people? for crying out loud, it's just a TV show. I mean, look at you. Look at the way you're dressed. You've turned an enjoyable little job that I did as a lark for a few years into a colossal waste of time. I mean, how old are you people? What have you done with yourselves? You must be almost 30. Have you ever kissed a girl? I didn't think so. There's a whole world out there. When I was your age, I didn't watch television. I lived. So move out of your parents' basement. And get your own apartments and grow the hell up. I mean, it's just a TV show, damn it. It's just a TV show.
Are you saying then that we should pay more attention to the movies?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Add your two cents to the debate. What rocks your world more, the original Star Trek TV series or the original Star Wars movie trilogy? Beam your comments to soundslikecanada@cbc.ca. I'm Drew Hayden Taylor. You've been listening to Sounds Like Canada.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.